This is Live and Local. It's your connection to local performances. And our program today will have conversations with the director of the Sangamon Valley Youth Symphony Program, Glenn Block. They're giving their spring concert Saturday afternoon in Springfield. And a group from Springfield, based in Springfield anyway, is the Handbell Ensemble called Bells in Motion. They will be giving a concert on Saturday at Wesley United Methodist Church in Urbana. And I'll be talking later on with their now retiring director, Michael Lamb, and also one of the longtime members of the group, whose name is Angie Chase. That's all coming up on the show today. It's Live and Local. Stay tuned. That was a bit of the opening of the famous Fifth Symphony of Ludwig van Beethoven, a performance by the Chamber Orchestra of Europe conducted by Nicholas Harnoncourt. And that is one of the pieces out of a great many that will be on the program Saturday at 1:30 in the afternoon at Sangamon Auditorium at the University of Illinois at Springfield for the Sangamon Valley Youth Symphony Program. And that is sort of a handful because there's multiple levels of that. Glenn Block is the music director for the program and is with me on the phone. Thanks for joining us very much.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Glenn is also a director of orchestras at Illinois State University. And Glenn, are you still doing the youth orchestra in Kansas City?
No. I ceased that activity about 5 years ago after 23 years of watching that program grow, and I was involved here at Illinois State and finding that I was commuting a one-day marathon to get to Kansas City and fly and drive out of Midway Airport, and at a certain point it was just beyond what I could provide for them as that program was growing even more, so I curtailed that activity.
Well, but that's, of course, a lot of a long experience working with young people there. And this is not your first time working with Sangamon Valley Youth Symphony, if I recall.
That's correct. I did a three-year tenure in the late 90s and through the beginning of the new millennia, and in helping launch that program. That was really very young program at the time, and so I was able to give 3 years to help launch that program.
And what brought you back?
Their program is more successful on many levels, as you've described, from very beginning level string program, a very active, very large beginning string program, to help the Springfield school system have that pool of players all the way through high school. In the two of the large orchestras and the older orchestras are basically high school aged.
We'll talk a little bit about that starter string program and looking at the concert program. You have a whole bunch of elementary schools listed and then a bunch of kids involved in each of those schools. And so on the concert Saturday, looks like you're combining students from the individual school programs?
That's correct. They've been able to identify under some grant work with the Springfield Public Schools to have in each of their elementary schools and junior high schools a beginning string program, since the school district itself cannot provide that. This is an external program that just works with the individual music teachers that are in residence and trying to give an opportunity for young string players to have a beginning.
And all of the pieces that are on the program have numbers to them. Looks like they come out of a collection of some sort?
There are some string method books that work for large groups that have different arrangements for particular instruments that once they're put together, they're able to sort of provide this orchestral sound for even beginning strings. It's actually really some wonderful sources that are available for school music teachers.
Well, some of these pieces I recognize from even back when I was taking piano lessons, tunes that seemed to work well for lots of different kinds of performers, Hot Cross Buns, A Tisket, A Tasket, and then things like the Talus Canon and A Mozart Melody. These are I guess they pick out melodies that can easily catch on that also have some educational aspects for the kids.
It's a really unique way to sort of provide this learning environment, because I think that's also a really important basis for the Suzuki methods that we refer to in young music players and string players starting, where the music that they have arranged is already recognizable. So it's sort of a step up for the learning process that is. These young players have recognized those tunes, and then they have particular arrangements to put it on a particular string with some fingerings and bowings that over time start providing the basis of a real articulate string technique.
Talk a little bit about the progression once students, you have the starter strings program, which we're talking about, as well as the junior strings, and then three other levels of orchestra, which are a little bit different, I notice. I was actually conducted two of the orchestras, it's been a long time ago now, before you did for a little bit, and it looks like a slightly different setup than I was involved in. So between the prep and the concert orchestra and the symphony orchestra, how's that progress organized?
It almost looks like it will match what is sort of a grade level. There's a preparatory orchestra that follows the beginning strings, which is really very early elementary, and then it goes into that preparatory orchestra that's sort of elementary but older elementary. The concert orchestra is primarily junior high, that 6th, 7th, 8th grade level, and then there's a top symphony orchestra that's basically high school from about 9th grade on. And there are always going to be players that are a little more advanced that have basically leaped over one of those levels. And so I have in the top symphony orchestra, there's some really advanced junior high players that are really on the fold. And I think it's always good to encourage those young players to go into the next higher level and start learning more difficult materials early on.
When I was involved with the program way back when, between the sort of middle orchestra and the top orchestra, there were sometimes some overlap in players, and I didn't actually notice looking at the personnel list if that still happens, and so that they get extra experience, or are these completely separate groups?
These are completely extant separate groups. Now, there's no filtering over, although the schedule would allow that. When I did it, this program in the late 90s, I think that was before your tenure.
Yeah, I did it in the early, mid-90s, actually.
Okay, then I would have followed your time then.
Yeah.
It was, I only had two ensembles to work with, and they were very young, very small, not complete ensembles at a sort of a junior high level and also a high school level. So the program has grown hugely, just even the beginning strings. There's over 100 players that are starting out and getting regular teaching. So that's going to, over time, provide a really large pool for these top youth symphony programs in San Juan.
An experience that I do remember having, and that I noticed that you must still be having, is even as the program grows, there are, in both the concert orchestra and the symphony orchestra, there are some sections where I guess nobody has come to audition, say in the trombones, for example. And I wonder how you deal with that if you're playing something like the Beethoven Fifth Symphony, which does have trombones at least eventually, and other pieces that normally would have those instruments. How do you work around holes in the orchestra?
The music we play provides some doubling of parts so that in some of these instruments that are not as numerous at this age level. The music is arranged in such a way that the parts are covered rather than just sort of having a musical whole. And it's a difficult part of the process to be able to just have a full complement of all the winds that we need and the number of strings that we ideally would need, given that the schools in Springfield don't have full programs for at the orchestral and band levels. The band level at the Springfield High School is very successful and really numerous, but it's difficult to get those students who are already involved in so many extracurricular activities to take on yet one more night out. And that scheduling problem is, I think, a problem for these external youth programs in these large cities. It's time management issues, even at this young level.
Yeah, well, that is definitely true. You have in the symphony orchestra part of the program a violin soloist, and I wonder how she came to earn the right to play that concerto, her concerto with the orchestra.
All of these youth programs and university programs have seem to have an annual concerto program of an opportunity to identify one of their top soloists to have an opportunity to perform with the orchestra. I have that at Illinois State. I had that in the youth symphony program in Kansas City. I know you have that with your program in Champaign-Urbana. And this is, again, another sort of clone of that opportunity. It's a sponsored concerto competition. There are auditions that happen once a year. External judges are brought in, and that's the way this process was identified.
So Twyla Sorensen, this year's winner for a concerto by Haydn. Violin concerto by Haydn.
Wonderful violinist, and the Haydn is an early concerto by Franz Joseph Haydn, so the accompaniment is just strings continuo, actually almost sort of a more Baroque sound and orchestration for that piece.
And what can you tell us about Twyla?
She's graduating senior and just has been in the program pretty much her entire musical life, and so she's herself a product of that kind of evolution we've been talking, how they basically go from one group to the next group as they get older and more accomplished.
Well, it's a wonderful experience for her to have worked in the Sangamon Valley Youth Symphony Program and then to work her way up and then to actually win the competition to get a chance to solo.
Yes, exactly.
The concert starts at 1:30 Saturday with the starter strings and then the junior strings program and then the preparatory orchestra led by Aaron Kaplan. Concert orchestra and then the symphony orchestra, both of those latter ensembles conducted by Glenn Block. The concert will be at the Sangamon Auditorium at University of Illinois at Springfield. Glenn has been my guest on this portion of Live and Local. And we'll go out with the opening portion of the Violin Concerto No. 1 of Haydn, which Twyla Sorensen will play on the concert. This, however, happens to be Pinka Zukerman, both as violinist and conductor of the National Arts Center Orchestra. Glenn, thanks for joining us on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's a bit of the opening of the first of Haydn's violin concertos, the C major concerto, with Pinka Zukerman as the violin soloist and the National Arts Center Orchestra, which he also conducted. And that is the movement that will be played by Twyla Sorensen on with the Sangamon Valley Youth Symphony on their concert on Saturday at 1:30 at Sangamon Auditorium in Springfield. Stay tuned for my conversation with director Michael Lamb, who leads Bells in Motion, the handbell ensemble based in Springfield, who are coming to Urbana for a concert this Saturday evening. Also, Angela Chase will be joining me on that during that conversation as well. Tonight at 7 o'clock here on FM 90.9, our evening concert will feature Jean-Yves Thibaudet as the piano soloist in Gershwin's Concerto in F, and also the Rhapsody in Blue with the New York Philharmonic. Alan Gilbert conducting the concert, which includes Bernstein's Overture to Candide and Symphonic Dances from West Side Story. It's the New York Philharmonic this week, tonight at 7 o'clock on our evening concert. Support for our show today comes in part from the Music Shop, celebrating 51 years of service to musical education. The Music Shop serves over 200 school music programs with band and orchestra instruments, a large sheet music department, thousands of accessories, and private lessons at 27 East Market View Drive in Market View Plaza, Champaign, or at themusicshop.com.
Thank you.
That was a tune called Ascension by Kevin McChesney, performed by the group based in Springfield called Bells in Motion from their CD called Bronze Images, directed by Michael J. Lamb. They are coming to Urbana on Saturday for a show at Wesley United Methodist Church. It's going to start at 7 o'clock. They'll also be performing that same program out of town in St. Louis, but it's sort of nice because I've been talking for a few years off and on with either Mike or with Angie Chase, who is one of the integral members of the group and who I used to know years ago when she played in my group here called the Prairie Ensemble, played French horn. And they had a chance to come by our studio, and Angie was, I could just feel the excitement through the email that you were going to be playing in Urbana. So that's pretty cool. Thanks both of you for coming in.
Sure.
Thank you.
I know I've asked you this question when we've talked before, but I've got you in the studio and I'll ask you again now. The notion of a professional handbell ensemble strikes me as not overly common, but maybe it's more common than I think.
It's actually getting a little more common. There are a lot of community groups that have been around for a while, and as they increase in stature and in proficiency, I think we've seen more and more of them moving to that professional level.
As opposed to what I normally think of, which is handbell choirs based in churches, often Methodist churches, as it happens.
That is true. Very, very, very true. I think also contributing to that is the increase of compositions and written especially for these higher level ensembles have really risen them a little bit more out of the churches and into the communities and the concert halls as well.
So meaning that people are writing for higher level church handbell choirs and then the professionals started coming along?
That's correct. It's the composers started writing a little bit higher level for the church ensembles, and then the community ensembles picked up on that and then started asking those same composers to write specially commissioned pieces for those community groups. And then that helped get some of the different styles integrated as well, such as the jazz and the pop and the rock that our group does and other community professional groups do as well.
And of course, most handbell choirs belonging to churches are going to do mostly sacred literature. You tend to do a mix of things that could be, are sacred in some way, at least in title. You don't typically have people singing, so you could call them whatever you want.
Right.
You know,
that's true.
Actually, we try and move a lot more towards the not only the pops music, but more the original compositions, things that won't get played in churches typically. So,
well, what about the piece we just heard, Ascension? Was that one that was written for you all, or written specifically for?
That was
professional level groups?
Yeah, that was actually written for a combination of, because it could be a liturgical, again, as you say, based on the name, you could be, for around the Easter time, but it could also be used in a more contemporary setting, like a concert.
And you all had to, there were drums in there. I don't remember if there was a bass going on as well.
Not in that particular one, but there is a piano, of course. And
piano,
in that
right.
particular piece, we added the drums to give it a more modern flair from what was originally conceived by the composer.
You probably wouldn't have the drum set in a church normally, but in some churches you might. But definitely is more of kind of a jazzy.
Well, it lends itself to both a contemporary and
right.
a traditional service.
Right, right, it does.
Are there purists who say you shouldn't be doing this to a handbell choir?
None that I've really met that didn't like it. In fact, the composer, Kevin McChesney, on this last one, accompanied us, played piano for us in Dallas at a national convention. He actually played the piano part for us on that, so he was certainly comfortable with us adding the drums to it.
Oh, you added it? So he
yes.
didn't put it in the piece in the first place?
No. No, he had it just written strictly for piano and bells.
Oh, so you guys are doing your own arranging.
Mm-hmm. A little bit.
Which must happen a lot, I imagine.
And as you take some of these original compositions, you will see some other ones that we do as well in the concert. We have one piece called Nocturne that was conceived as a just bell and hand chime piece, and we've added a lot of percussion and keyboard, bass, everything to it, and gotten the sound quite different from what it was originally conceived.
Well, since you have mentioned it, Why don't we play that piece, right, appropriately enough? Do you have a segment here on this CD, your Bronze Images CD, that has four tunes separate that says Bells in Motion Live? So the rest were not exactly studio recordings.
But... Basically, we recorded them in a church as a studio kind of setting. But we have four that we did at various concerts, not all in one concert, a couple different concerts that we did live. This particular track for Nocturne we did in a joint concert with the Jane Hartman Trio, and we have Jane and her trio playing with us on the piece, so that's why it has a very distinctive sound and flavor to it.
Music by Michael Hellman, written for the American Guild of English Handbell Ringers. Now that raises a question in a moment. Nocturne in C minor, played by Bells in Motion. They're going to be in Urbana Saturday night at 7 o'clock for a concert at Wesley United Methodist Church. You're listening to Live and Local.
Thank you.
The group is called Bells in Motion, and the music, A Nocturne in C Minor by Michael Hellman. Bells in Motion joined here by the Jane Hartman Trio with Jane on the piano and Rich Olson, the drummer, Melody Palm, the bassist. And that's from their CD called Bronze Images. Bells in Motion are going to be performing at Wesley United Methodist Church on West Green Street in Urbana this Saturday evening at 7 o'clock. Bells in Motion, a professional group based in Springfield. And their music director, Michael Lamb, is with me here on the show, as is one of their longtime members, Angie Chase. And Angie, the one who told me about the group in the first place. Coming back to the professional business of being a professional handbell choir, I assume that that implies that in order to get into the group, you need to be a certain level. And if so, how does one go about auditioning handbell ringers?
I actually work them through a number of different things. And it's, different groups do it differently, but I've always found to do it individually, one-on-one, gives me the best feel for the ability of the person. So they'll have prepared music that they play. They'll have techniques that they demonstrate and some sight reading that they do. So a pretty typical audition for this type of a group.
So more or less the same as for anything else. But the difference is that I remember from previous conversations with both of you that in a handbell choir, you typically have a couple of notes or a few notes that each person plays. So What do you do? Have a group of people from the choir who now play the rest of the tune?
Yeah, I usually have a recording that I play, and then they'll play along with the recording. So something that the group has played that I have on tape, and then the person that's auditioning will play along to the tape so that they can hear how everything fits together. But then I can still isolate their notes a little better. And yeah, ideally we'd have a whole group get together, but that's not really possible with our group because of the time it would involve. So,
well, I kind of wondered if that would be necessary, because do you have any sort of a for lack of a better term, probationary period where, let's say, you choose somebody you think will be all right and you think, well, let's integrate them into the group for a while and then maybe it works, maybe it doesn't.
We have an internship program, and that allows them to come in, play on a couple pieces, be a sub on others, like in rehearsal when there's maybe an opening, and to study up on all the parts and then re-audition to be a full member of the group once they've did at least a semester of internship.
Now, you just referred to a sub. Is that a level of member of the group?
Not really, but it's just when we have a hole in the group, obviously we only have one person per part. So if a person is missing for whatever reason in rehearsal or for part of a rehearsal, we'll have to have someone step in as a substitute ringer for them so that we can cover the part.
And that must happen at performances now and then too, in case somebody can't come or if you go on tour and not everybody can go.
Actually, we've been pretty lucky, but yes, we have people available to step in at moment's notice, and only once has that happened in the middle of a performance. We had someone almost pass out, and in the middle of the piece, we had one of our substitutes step in and start ringing in their spot while they sat down. That was pretty interesting.
Talk about pressure.
Does that mean you have to bring a small stable of subs along and make sure they're in the audience or something, just in case?
We actually have more ringers than we need for any one piece, and we rotate them in and out so that all of our ringers will be a substitute ringer on a particular piece so that they can step in when needed.
And you've got 18 members or so. So how many will you involve in a typical piece?
Usually 13 or 14, depending on the requirements.
In our lower bells and lower chimes, sometimes we'll have even two more. So it could be up to 17 in a piece if we use the full range of bells and they're really going and need extra people and extra hands on the big aluminum bells that we play.
Angie, I know that you're involved in music as a teacher and sometimes a player of some things. Mm-hmm. Mike, you're not professionally, but how did you get involved in handbells?
Well, as many of the handbell directors did, I was helping to direct the choir at church. And the church I was at, First Congregational in Springfield, decided they wanted to purchase bells. And so the current choir director at the time asked me if I'd consider directing the handbell group. And I said, okay, I just don't know anything about handbells. And so he took me to a few of the conventions that were in the area by the American, at that time it was called American Guild of English Handbell Ringers. Now they've renamed to Handbell Musicians of America, and kind of learned it in, learned that way.
But you obviously had some sort of affinity for it. Did you need to start ringing yourself, or did you just come in as a director and never really one of the ringers?
I did ring for a little bit, but mostly just in the sessions and workshops and things like that. So I came in pretty much as director right off the bat. But I do a fair amount of ringing now myself as a soloist, a handbell soloist, and then also in some ensemble ringing. And then when I go to events like on the national level, I'll ring. So kind of keep going that way.
Okay, now here's a concept I didn't know existed. Handbell soloist.
It is true.
In what context?
It is true. It's really neat. One handbell ringer has the whole table filled with two, three, sometimes even four octaves mm-hmm. of bells. And there are many pieces written for solo handbells and usually a keyboard or a piano or an organ accompaniment. And that one person plays all the notes required for that piece. And many times, most of the time, it's only one note at a time, but many times there are times where it's two or three or four notes at a time where you have two bells in each hand. And it's a pretty highly skilled, virtuosic thing to be able to do as a handbell ringer. And Mike is really good at it.
Angie's been doing it as well.
So. I'm trying. I'm definitely learning to do it better and better and better. And I find that knowing how to ring handbell solos helps me so much in ringing with a big group as well, because there's different techniques used and you can apply that to the big group as well.
I think like really picking cool. up the bells quickly off the table when you've forgotten there's a keychain.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, so, I'm just imagining that this is something that surely must be up on YouTube of some really virtuosic handbell soloist doing some incredible
Absolutely.
Things.
Oh, there are some
Absolutely.
Out there, yeah.
Yes, mm-hmm. there definitely mm-hmm. are. You could look that up on YouTube and find many, many, many things like that if you wanted to. It's really neat.
Well, let's hear another example of Bells in Motion performing here. This is a piece called Toccata Ritmica, which just means rhythmic toccata. A toccata, literally touch piece, which doesn't really say much of anything, but it used to always be, and still is, I guess, for anybody who's still writing toccatas, used to be a virtuosic, basically a show-off piece, usually for a keyboardist. Mm-hmm. But in this case, I guess it's a show-off piece for the handbell choir.
It starts with a big, pretty big sound, and one of the things that everyone in the audience always tells me is the techniques that they see right off the bat, the wall of sound it creates, are pretty amazing. We use what's called a martellato, where the bells are struck on the pad on the table, and it's a sharper sound than you get with the ringing. And so you'll hear that in the first two notes, and then we do what's called a mart lift, where you strike it on the pad and then lift it into the air so it's still sustained, but it has a heavy accent to start it. And those first three notes kind of set up a pretty loud sound to start with.
Well, let's give it a listen. Toccata Ritmica. It's music by Michael Joy, seems an appropriate name, with Bells in Motion. They're going to be in Urbana for a concert on Saturday night.
Thank you.
That was music called Toccata Rhythmica by Michael Joy, played by Bells in Motion, directed by Michael Lamb from their CD called Bronze Images. And they're going to be playing in Urbana Saturday night at 7 o'clock at Wesley United Methodist Church. My guests on this portion of Live and Local are Mike Lamb and Angie Chase of she seems to be in charge of publicity there, and also one of the ringers for some years with the ensemble. I was waiting for that last chord to just keep ringing, and then you stopped it. And I'm curious to know, when do you decide to let a chord ring out? Because you obviously play, I would imagine, most of the time in churches that have these wonderful resonant acoustics, and of course you're playing bells that by their nature resonate. And I just wonder how you gauge those kind of things.
It kind of depends on the circumstance and the space that we're in and what the sound and acoustics are like. But it's a little drier sound sometimes on the recordings. And we play in a wide variety of spaces, so some of them are a little drier. Certainly, yeah, it depends on what the chord is sounding like in that space that we're in at the time.
One of the neat, I think at the end of that one, maybe, I'm not sure if they added the chimes at the end of that one. One of the neat effects on some of the ends of our pieces is that we, along with the hand bells, we add the hand chimes, which are an instrument similar to the bells. And if you play them together with the bells, it sounds like an organ chord at the very end of the piece. And that's a really neat effect, and we are going to be playing that effect on a couple pieces on our concert.
And if I remember, the significant difference is what they're made of.
Yes, is it
right?
Five?
The hand chimes are aluminum, whereas five. Bronze are what the bell's made out of. So,
and they're a different shape too. The hand chimes are a pure rectangular
like
shape, and they have
like
a tuning
fork.
Yeah, exactly.
I know you brought a couple of bells along, and I remember. Oh, I don't even remember the occasion now. Quite some years ago, being shown good handbell ringing technique as opposed to what most people would naturally assume you do with a handbell, which ends up not producing a very good sound. And I wonder, since you brought them along, if you could maybe demonstrate what would be good handbell ringing and maybe not so good handbell ringing, or maybe the other way around. If somebody was just going to pick one up and probably try to play something with it, what are they going to do?
Yeah, so what Angie has just done is to ring with the bell pointed down so that the sound is heading down to the floor and up to the ceiling instead of out towards the audience. Plus, she's holding it in steady so it doesn't move and you don't get any Doppler effect of the sound. So it's not a live sound. It's just kind of a dead sound.
Now, I think I'd have assumed... I actually remember when I first tried to do it. Like, give me one of those bells. Let me see if I can do this here. I'm going to do it as badly as I think I would have been inclined the first time. I don't know how this is going to come across. It doesn't sound as bad as I thought. Maybe it's because I've learned something about it. But I think I would have just flicked my wrist or something and...
But it is hard to make a bell sound bad. I mean, bells by the nature sound nice to begin with. So,
but you can make them just clunk somehow or another. I'm trying to make it clunk, and I can't seem to make it
well,
clunk.
Maybe
I'm a naturally gifted handbell ringer.
The more modern ones have a little bit more spring to them, and so the clapper's not going to rest on the casing like it would on some older models, but they've made progressions in how the bells are made in the last 30, 40 years.
Well, maybe that was part of it, is because it seemed to me it would just rest there if you didn't do this thing where you sort of almost throw it out, right? So give us a really well-rung
I'll try.
Bell.
You notice what I did was I kept my wrist and my arm in motion.
And also to ring it more vertically so that when the sound is going out, which it comes out from the sides of the bell, it's actually going out towards the audience.
Yeah, and the question is, how much are microphones picking up? We mm-hmm. don't really know.
Well, they'll just have to come to the concert and see.
That's right. That's right. Well, I know that that's ultimately your hope mm-hmm. in coming over here to talk to us. Mike, I have to ask you something. I saw very shortly after hearing that you all were going to come here, I saw a notice that this is your last season with the choir as director.
Right. I'm stepping down. It's been I formed the choir 15 years ago, and I've decided it's a good timing, 15th year anniversary, to step down. I have other projects I want to pursue, and
that sounds like a politician's thing to say. I have other projects, and then they never tell you what they are. So I'm going to ask you, like what?
Well, some things just on a personal level, having to take care of things at home, many maintenance things like that. But also other Bell, like my solo activities. I'd like to do an album, like to do some more concerts, solo ringing, some ensemble work possibly. And Bells in Motion, as you can imagine, takes up a huge amount of time. So that is something that will free that up. Plus, I think the group is at a good stage to move on to a new direction with a new director and to continue expanding.
Do you have any idea yet who the new director might be?
No, the board of directors has been accepting applications. I know they have one from Colorado, one from up in Bloomington. With the way that we do things, they can pretty much accept people from all over the country. So. They'll be looking nationwide for this.
So when you say the way that you do things, meaning?
Our group gets together just four rehearsals per semester and rehearses just a full day on Saturday and then for each rehearsal and then do our concerts. So
you'll do these rehearsals in a chunk?
Yeah, like, 6-hour right block of, no, they'll actually, but they could be done that way, but right now we do them one weekend a month. So. As we get ready for the concerts.
We do have some ringers from as far away as Wisconsin and also Green Bay, Wisconsin, mm-hmm. and then also in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. So they are able to come and make the 4-5, 6-hour drive just that once a month. That's how we do that.
You must pay really well.
I'm yeah. sure not as well as I'd like.
It's the joy of ringing. That's what makes it worth it.
Yeah. Well, it's always been a pleasure to talk to each of you when we've been able to do it on the phone, and it's even better to have you in person to kind of play off of each other and as we can listen to the music as we're talking, which is great. And I know we're going to go out with one that everybody will know. I mean, so far, the three pieces that we've heard were pieces written, I presume, for handbells. This next piece was not written for handbells, decidedly, but arranged for handbells. Called Rock Around the Clock. And you were telling me before we actually started, before we opened up the microphones, that there's a technique that was invented for this arrangement or something
yes.
like that?
Yeah, the composer, and I actually had the opportunity to ring with her in a group, national group, a couple of years ago when she first came out with this piece. She came up with this technique to kind of simulate a trombone slide. She called it a smear. If you will, but it actually takes the bells. You have two consecutive bells, and just by the Doppler effect of how you ring them and move them, you get kind of a slide from one note to the next. And it's very prominent in this recording, especially in the second half of the recording. You'll kind of hear it, and you have to be in just the right place to notice it the best, but you'll hear it in the piece, and it's kind of a new technique that they just developed.
And her name is Carol Lynn...
Mizell.
Mizell. Mm-hmm. Okay. Didn't know how she said that. And original piece written by, I would have never known this, Max Freeman and Jimmy DeKnight, further arranged by John Edmondson, and then the handbell arrangement by Carolyn Mizell for the Choristers Guild, or published by the Choristers Guild anyway, and played here by Bells in Motion. Professional band handbell ensemble based in Springfield. They're performing a concert in Urbana on Saturday, 7 o'clock at Wesley United Methodist Church, and tickets are available at the door. Are there advance tickets available or just
at the door?
Mm-hmm. Just at the door. For more information on Bells in Motion, you have a website, which is bellsinmotion.org. Angie Chase and Mike Lamb, thanks very much for joining us on Live and Local.
You're welcome.
Bells in Motion playing Rock Around the Clock here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Some other concerts going on in our listening area tonight. The University of Illinois Jazz Vocal Ensemble and Wind Symphony will both be playing at the Krannert Center tonight in Urbana at 7:30. Not together, but in different halls there. The Traditional Jazz Orchestra is at the Iron Post in Urbana this evening at 5. It's Legally Blonde the Musical at the Assembly Hall in Champaign tonight at 7:30. Denise LaGrassa is at the Doubletree in Bloomington this evening at 5 o'clock. University of Illinois Symphony Orchestra and UI Jazz Ensemble 4 both playing at the Krannert Center tomorrow evening at 7:30. And the Central Illinois Jazz Orchestra at the Fieldhouse Bar and Grill in Peoria tomorrow evening at 7 o'clock. You're listening to 90.9 WYLFM and HD Urbana with translators W266AF Urbana and W293AF Danville, NPR, classical music, and more for Central Illinois. WYL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois, and we have support from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana, with wines, beers, and spirits for the serious collector to the first-time buyer. Wine tastings are held on Saturdays from 3 to 6:30 p.m. in the Bouvon Wine Bar. More information is available at thecorkscrew.com. It's currently 63 degrees at a minute past 1 o'clock.